Hey there, and welcome back to this week's episode of Fit Friends Happy Hour. I'm your host, Katie, and if you haven't already, be sure to go back and listen to last week's episode where I shared more about how I was able to feel my best, not just mentally, but also physically, while planning a wedding in a pandemic. Now, I reached out to fellow Corona brides, and I am so excited for you to listen to today's episode. Our guest has asked to remain anonymous as she is 18 months into recovery from her eating disorder and her exercise addiction. She is currently not at a place where she's ready to share her struggle with those she knows. However, she did volunteer willingly to just be a voice, to just share her story with us. And for that, I am so honored because she knows that this is going to inspire somebody else to take that next step on her journey. Now, today we talked about how she actually went about asking for help and, you know, like many others, initially seeking out help, whether it is for your own health, for a mental standpoint, relationship, whatever it is, it initially wasn't a great fit. And we talked about how she was able to stay motivated to continue doing this deep work, working on herself and what her experience has been like. She shares some tangible tips that have helped her to stay positive. And I really think her positivity and her energy is something that we can all use more of in 2020. I am just so grateful for her sharing her story and just her rawness and her realness. And whether you have struggled with an eating disorder or you know somebody, I think there's so many pieces of her story that if you just struggle with body image and your relationship with food, I really think you're going to get a lot of key takeaways from today's episode. If you love the podcast, which I hope you do, don't forget to subscribe and leave us a review. And head on over to our Facebook page to continue the conversation. We'll put the link in the show notes. All right, on to the show. Welcome to Fit Friends Happy Hour, a podcast about all things nutrition, fitness, and life in your 20s and 30s, all from a non-diet lens. I'm your host, Katie Hake, and I'm a registered dietitian nutritionist and certified personal trainer. Join me here every week as I talk with interesting people and experts from all walks of life about their relationship with food, exercise, and their bodies. I am on a mission to help you redefine the word fit, to help you stop quantifying and start living. Learn to stop measuring your success by the scale and find your fears. Welcome to Fit Friends Happy Hour. We're so excited to have you today.
Thanks so much for having me. I'm looking forward to this.
So we connected because COVID brides everywhere across the country. I don't know about you, but I was like Googling, how can I find blogs? Like surely there's got to be some manual for how to plan a wedding during a pandemic.
You think there's a lot of websites out there that claim to that have the how-to, but at the end of it, it's kind of like, well, who knows? Things right. Change every day and it has to be what you want. So, you know, I wish there were a manual. It might make things a little bit easier for a lot of women right now.
Yes. So last week I recorded an episode talking about, you know, my personal journey with just food and body and how it relates to not just planning a wedding, right? Because a lot of women listening or people, everybody knows that that is a stressful season of life, but add on top of that body image issues and a pandemic, right? It's a whole nother ball game, right? So we're going to talk, you know, about your experience, but also let's start back from the beginning. So you are 18 months into recovery. Amazing. Congratulations. That is a huge deal. Working with, you know, health at every size, non-diet providers, you know, tell us your story. Just what got you to where you are?
Yeah. And thank you. It is a journey and it's not totally linear. And so I'll share some of that as we go. But let's see, about a year and a half ago, you know, I was just finding how much of my day was consumed with body and food thoughts. Mm-hmm. I'm a distance runner. And so a lot of my identity is an athlete and a lot of my time is spent actually physically running. Mm-hmm. And running is something I love and it makes me feel strong and it gives me goals, but it's also a very numbers driven sport. It's a sport where most of the athletes are really small. And when someone isn't small, there's always a lot of noise about that. And so I was finding that my running world was becoming kind of consumed more with body thoughts and food thoughts as compared to athletic or achievement thoughts.
Yeah.
So I was finding that I was starting to use the running really as a compensatory exercise more than anything. And it wasn't always that way. It's not like that's how it started, but I just kind of sat there one day and realized, like, it's 2 p.m. and this is all I've thought about. Like, this is all I've done. I mean, yes, I work full time and I'm doing stuff, but I just realized, like, that's what consumed my entire day. And so in that day, I realized, you know, I can't figure this out on my own. I've been trying and I can't figure this out on my own. And so that day I called my healthcare provider and was looking for therapy, and they actually got me in that day. So I don't know if there was something about my story that was particularly, like, concerning. And at the time, you know, there were kind of restrict and binge or restrict and overcompensatory kind of exercise cycles, but they got me in that day for an intake and said, okay, you need therapy, you need a dietitian, and you need group therapy. I was super overwhelmed because I went from nothing to, like, you need all these things right now.
Like you need need a full team. Yeah. Wow.
Yeah. It was, you need this team. And like, it seems very structured and it was just a lot at once. But the positive of that was, I think it kind of shook me a little bit. Like, hey, this isn't small, you know, this is something you need to focus on.
Yeah.
And so I did that work, and I'll say, you know, it's, to the point of it being a journey, is like, that did not work right away.
Mm.
The group therapy I was a part of was really useful, and hearing the stories of other people and what they're going through, what's worked for them, what hasn't worked for them, how long it's taken them to make progress was super helpful. I will say the initial therapist and dietitian I got were not a fit, like, at all. And I, you know, would do the homework and try to go along with it, but it felt like every week I was, you know, opening up all these wounds and then, you know, not getting help. Like, why are you bleeding? And so,
yeah.
So after 6 months of that, and I'm kind of talking to my partner about my frustrations, it was clear I needed, you know, different support. Like, at that point, I really realized I needed support, and then was in that place of, but I don't have any. So around kind of New Year's, I realized I needed different providers, essentially. And so I was really methodical about interviewing them, not just, will you take me and do you take my insurance, but tell me about your approach. What are you going to do with me in sessions? What am I going to do in between sessions?
I love that.
Yeah, because it should be a two-way thing. And so I found a therapist that specialized in athletes with eating disorders, and similarly a dietitian that did. And when I started working with them, I was kind of put back in that phase of, like, oh my gosh, I still have so much work to do. The dietitian in particular was appalled with my nutrition, which I in this place was, but I've been working so hard. Like, I've been doing this for a long time. Like, I've gained weight. Like, what are you talking about? But then, so it did kind of feel like, oh, but this isn't enough. What do you mean it isn't enough?
Right. You felt like you were making progress, and then to hear, wait, but this wasn't the right progress, or not fast enough, or impactful enough.
Yeah. Like, it just, it felt like every time I saw my dietitian that she would say, okay, that was good, but, you know, we still have to eat more. Like, we still have to do more. So, or if suddenly the, like, volume of meals was right, we had to change the time. Like, I had to eat more frequently. It was just like, there's always more.
Yeah.
So that was an adjustment, as I'd gone from this provider where we didn't fit well, but they were happy. I was eating multiple times a day. So they made me feel like I was making progress, to going to this new provider where we connected a lot better and I was more confident in their care, but it felt like I was never going to make enough progress. So that was definitely a transition. And then around that time, I injured myself running. So, you know, going back to kind of how the identities connect, I hurt myself in a race and then I couldn't run anymore. And so at the same time of, you know, being told every single week, like, you have to eat more, this isn't enough, suddenly I couldn't run, which is, you know, not only kind of a balance for me if I'm eating more and not exercising, but it's also just my outlet, my time alone every day. So it felt like that was taken away. And so that was pretty hard. And so there were a couple tough months with that. And then I moved. So I had these great providers that really pushed me for probably about 4 months. And we knew that was going to be the case. We knew that it was going to be a short-term thing. So mm-hmm. they wanted to kind of get me on my way. And then once I've settled in here in my new home, I'm just kind of in the stage of getting settled with new providers, which so far has gone well. But, you know, I don't know if any of your listeners are facing this. Finding a provider during COVID is actually pretty tough. They're in demand. and working with providers virtually can be a little more difficult to kind of build the rapport. So I'm in that stage of getting stabilized with people out here.
Well, first of all, I hear persistence, which I want to recognize because that can be so challenging just to even acknowledge, like, oh, maybe this isn't normal. Maybe these thoughts around my body or my food or how much I exercise, maybe that's not normal. Was there a certain mm-hmm. moment for you? I mean, you mentioned where you were specifically working. What was that moment where you went, okay, this is not, I need help. This is beyond me.
Yeah, that's a really good question. You know, I made a lot of lists when I was kind of in that phase of, you know, like, what am I eating? And then tracking, like, based on the runs, what am I going to eat? And if I can't run a certain day, how am I going to adjust that? Mm-hmm. And I think, like, literally looking at the documents of how much did I put into that was kind of eye-opening. So it was odd to me when they did suggest that I use food logs as a part of my recovery. But that's when, like, I can do that too much. And so it's one of those things to balance.
Yeah, I imagine when you're sharing your story, I imagine that we've all seen it on social media and the internet, that what people think success looks like is that straight line uphill. And what it actually looks like is like all these different twists and turns and
all over the place. Yeah, yeah.
But eventually uphill. So you recently got engaged. So let's tell us about that. And I mean, oh my gosh, you've been so many moving pieces. So tell us about the engagement and how has wedding planning been just from a general planning standpoint?
Yeah, yeah. So got engaged in April. My partner and I moved from California to Boulder around that time. And really at the beginning of our time in Boulder, he proposed, and it was something that I didn't know was coming immediately. I mean, we talked about our future and generally that's, you know, something that's in the cards, but I didn't have a sense it was coming soon. So I was totally surprised and just so excited.
You said it was just after you moved too, right?
It was like the week we moved.
Oh my gosh.
So we got out of California, we got here, we're here for a couple days, and then we went on a run together, and just at the end of the run, that's something to share. He proposed, and you know, it's just really exciting. And while wedding planning is certainly really trying, I'm sure we'll get to that and how that influences other things, it's also really amazing to have something positive to look forward to in all of this. So I remember calling our family and friends and them saying, like, it's so great to have good news.
Like, yes.
They keep us updated on this. Like, we need good news these days. And so I really appreciated that perspective and to have that right now. And then as far as wedding planning, you know, when we first got engaged, we were thinking like, oh, March of next year will be, you know, totally doable, like, no problem. We'll have so much time to plan. It'll be safe. I don't think that's in the cards for us. Most of our family is going to have to travel in. So we want to wait until things are safe for them. So we're thinking of doing something really small in the next month or two, you know, for us, and then taking our time to plan the big ceremony. So
I love
really
that.
Really excited that we'll be able to have everyone here, but yeah, you know, at the same time, we want to plan it now. We want to do it now.
I love your perspective, and I feel like we so relate on that. I for the most part have felt fairly positive. I mean, I got engaged. I was almost like a year ahead of you, supposed to get married in April, and then push everything back. So, I mean, when you got engaged, it sounds like you focused on really the positives of it. Was it hard for, or did you have moments of feeling like, I feel bad for myself? What are we going to do? We're not going to get the big day. Like, have you experienced kind of that like emotional roller coaster of that piece of it?
A little bit. Yeah, it's hard turns out to, because it's something you look forward to. And I think, like, if you want the traditional experience, you're going to be disappointed. And yeah. So
true.
Like, if you look at the magazines and say, like, oh, like, when are you going to have your engagement party and your bridal shower and your bachelorette? And it, like, that's just not going to happen, frankly, right? It's just an adventure.
Yeah.
And stuff like that has come up. If you watch movies about weddings or wedding planning shows, guess what? They were filmed before COVID. And so they don't have those constraints. They're just traditional. And so it's hard not to watch them and go, like, well, I can't have that. I can't have that. Like, that won't work. So the other thing that happens too is, like, comparing yourself to other brides. So, like, a friend of mine got engaged a few weeks after I did. And, you know, I've shared my plan, definitely waiting, but she's got her venue booked. She's trying on dresses. She's been to 4 bridal salons and I'm happy for her, but you know, at the same time, it's hard not to sit there and be like, well, I haven't tried on dresses. Like,
yeah.
I don't know. Like, what am I going to do that? So it's both. I think if you can just focus on the positive and, like, going to get married and I'm going to make it my own, then it's, you can use it as something to look forward to. But if you have expectations of what it's supposed to be like, or I don't know, your family has expectations of what it's supposed to be like, you'll get disappointed quickly.
Yeah. I think what's tough about specifically planning during COVID too, is that everybody's comfort level is so different. And so I don't know if you relate to getting stuck in that comparison trap, but you compare yourself and then you recognize, but I have a different comfort level of, you know, like you said, I want my family to all be there. I want people to be safe. People are traveling. Like, so it's just interesting with things starting to open up and how everybody's, we're comparing, but not realizing that we are in totally different spaces.
I think that's a great point. Yeah. Everyone is coming from different places and things change so quickly, and thinking about what I'm comfortable with is totally different than someone who I'd expect to get on a plane and come here, and maybe they have kids and, you know, who knows what else. So yeah, I think keeping everybody in mind and just those varying levels helps reset a little bit.
What are some of the challenges that you are still facing with body image?
So there's kind of the continuous sort of identity piece of, like, am I still an athlete if I am a different size and look different than other athletes? Like, will I still, you know, physically fit in? I think another one that's come up, you know, in a big way is clothes. Clothes are a huge trigger. I'm kind of at that point where about half of my clothes fit and half of them don't. And if I'm totally honest with myself, of course I can guess which ones do and don't, and I could protect myself, but I don't, I'm human. So if there's something I want to wear, I'll put it on, and then often, you know, get really upset when it doesn't fit, or here, when I think it doesn't fit. And so that's also been really big in the wedding planning. I mentioned earlier not trying dresses on yet, and I could have, like, I have been engaged since April. Like, I could have tried dresses on by now, but I haven't. I'm absolutely scared that I'm gonna hate them on, or that being in front of the mirror for that long is going to be a bad experience. And so I've been pausing on that and kind of protecting myself from that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think at least my perception too, is that there's this big, you know, that it's going to be this glamorous time. Like, you know, there's this image painted that when you go try on dresses, it's going to be magical and you're going to feel like a bride in a movie, and you're going to cry when you have on the dress. And I'm like, I don't think that's reality.
Yeah. You know, it's easy to picture what it might be like. And I watch Say Yes to the Dress all the time. And it's,
right. That's what we imagine.
Yeah. Yeah. And on one hand, it's helpful to see that, you know, women of all shapes and sizes and backgrounds and ages show up and end up with a dress they love. But guess what? They also end up with dresses they hate and fight with their parents. And this is all with Hollywood magic, like making it better. So, like, what would it be like for me, like, off in my corner without that and with masks and, like, spraying Lysol and all the people, like, near me? I mean, that sounds incredibly stressful. So
yeah
it's one thing I've been working on with my therapist is to, like, think about all the ways it could go well. Like, it might not be bad. Guess, like, you might enjoy it. But it's hard not to think of all of the things that would be stressful about it and build that up.
What are things that you've been doing just from kind of a recovery standpoint? And, you know, obviously you are in the depths of it. I mean, work really actively working through it. But what are some of the things that you kind of do from your day to day that have helped you, not just, you know, individually, but also as, you know, as a bride?
Yeah, it's a good question. So I guess when things are like really heavy and it's hard to kind of break through some of the eating disorder thoughts or focuses, I read. That was something that a therapist gave to me because I just, how do I describe it? The negative thoughts can be so loud for me that watching a movie or doing something fun can still not quite be enough. Like I need my mind to be super engaged.
You're there, but you're not there.
Yeah, like they're still kind of playing in the background. Like I can take a lot of background noise.
Yeah.
And so reading something either from a different time or just really engaging is helpful for me to reset. Because a lot of it for me is just to reset and move forward. I tried the meditating thing, and I know that like in all of the research, everybody thinks meditating is really great to help you be present. It doesn't really help me. I swear, I've tried like all the different apps. I've tried times a day. It's not super helpful. And so I think what's been helpful as far as a bride is to think about what are the things in front of me that I can control? Because guess what? I cannot really think about that wedding that's maybe a year and a half or 2 years away. I can't plan anything for it. I just can't, you know, without knowing when it'll be, I can't plan a venue without that. There's so many other things you can't. So it's not constructive to think about the things that I can't do, but think about the things that are like right in front of me. So us eloping in a month or two, I can think about where we want to get photos after that, because I know that's going to be near where we live and I know it's going to be in fall. So that's something I can do, or I can, you know, one thing we did was we picked out our wedding bands. Like that's something we can do that COVID can't really get in the way of, and we can get really excited about and share together.
Yeah.
So I keep going back to that piece of like what's immediately in front and controllable, because there's too many variables in everything else.
Yeah. And I like what you said, or I mean, I can so relate to what you said myself, but also clients of, that the negative thoughts can be so powerful. And I think when we struggle with body image and negative thoughts around food, it's almost like you're a runner. So you'll relate to this, you know, the treadmill's going, right? If you're at a gym or you're, you know, you're somewhere and you hear those treadmills, it's like this humming, right? But if you're the first, if you're the first one in the gym or the last one in the gym and everything's off, it's like silence. You don't even realize how loud they are until they stop.
Yeah. Uh-huh. That's so true. I really like that metaphor. Yeah. They get really loud. And I think that's true of any kind of comparison too. Like one thing that's really big for me as far as body image is comparison. I think I mentioned like comparing to other athletes or comparing just to other people all the time. Like that's really negative for my body image. And that's so easy to do with wedding stuff too. It's like, oh, well, I even did it now. Like my friend tried on four dresses, or my friend did this. So instead, like, what can I do that's like unique to my wedding?
Yeah. And you answered this a little bit, but what are things you've done to kind of protect yourself? Or, you know, I'm sure you've gotten so many questions about, oh, have you picked a dress? Like people asking questions kind of specific to you. What have you done, or how do you respond to people in a way that protects your energy and kind of your process and your recovery?
That's such a good question, because it did drive me nuts. Like the first, I think, month after we got engaged, that's all anybody asks. And it comes from a really good place because they're excited for you. And
yeah,
kind of what you ask somebody who's just engaged. But it's, again, like things are so different. So I think the time frame kind of helped. And I, you know, with pushing things out. And so I kind of make a joke out of it and say, like, I'll tell you what I know. And people usually get that pretty quickly, but I that's not perfect, and it is stressful, because every time people ask, it's like there's some expectation that you've figured it out. And so rather than going into like all like, well, I have half of these things like a quarter of the way figured out, I just kind of say like, oh, I have no idea. I'll tell you when I do. And that just kind of puts an end to it and puts some distance, because the expectations are hard to manage.
Yeah, I like that. And I always felt this too of, you know, how is it that we're suddenly just expected to plan this big event? And it's like, I'm not an event planner. I don't know. You know, I know you can hire wedding coordinators mm-hmm. and things like that, but yeah, there's this pressure of, well, we should just have it all figured out. And it's like, hold on. What?
When everybody wants to tell you about their wedding, which I guess that they want to share, and it's such an important part of your life. And, you know, you and me planning a wedding in the middle of COVID, like, that's not anything like my mom planning her wedding many years ago, or somebody who got married 3 years ago. Like, guess what? It's a totally different ballgame right now.
Yeah.
So thank you for your advice, but it's not relevant.
I was actually listening to a podcast today talking about just feeling your feelings, and we are so problem oriented type people. And it feels like people want to like be on the same level of pain. Right. And so it's really hard for us to be happy for other people but also sit in our suck. Right. And so I think that can be challenging with the planning too, of like you said, the comparison, whether it's wedding planning or, you know, other areas of our life.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Definitely.
So how has working with specifically Health at Every Size and non-diet providers been helpful to your journey? And did you even know that was kind of the providers that you were getting into, or what was that journey like?
So that was pretty clear early into the journey. I would say the first provider that was really specific about it was the leader of the group therapy that I used to go to. And I think it was especially prominent in there because, you know, everyone in the group had their own journey and, you know, also had their own way that disordered eating showed up. They're not all coming from exactly the same background. They don't all necessarily have the same goals, but something like a non-diet or Health at Every Size approach, the goal of that is kind of the same for everyone and does work well, or at least in that group did work really well. So it did take some time for me to kind of get where they were coming from. And it did help that they had research, because I think the first thing that a lot of people come back with is like, no, like Health at Every Size doesn't work. Like, look at all the headlines. Of course that doesn't work. Obesity is related to everything. And you dig into that, like, that's not quite true.
Yeah.
There are a lot of other, there's so many other variables is what it came down to. There's a lot of complexity, and disordered eating is the thing to address. And so I think she was so clear in that approach and had a lot of good resources and podcasts that it resonated pretty quickly. And then I would say with the providers I found later, you know, they were a similar approach, and the fact that they were so well aligned really helped. So the fact that the dietitian had a very clear approach that had no numbers for me to focus. Well, you know, the only numbers were like how many hours between meals. Then that really lined up with what I was doing in therapy as far as letting some of the details go and trusting myself. So having that kind of continuity really helped. I think one thing that one of the therapists had said that resonated with me was like, look, if counting everything and, you know, going with this diet approach worked, like, none of us would be in here. if that approach worked, like, we'd all be solved. We'd all be perfect. Because if worrying about calories and beating yourself up for what you ate and compensate, if that all was the right approach, like, none of us would have any issues and be in here. But guess what? That's not the case. and so that really resonated with me. It's like, I've been trying it this way a long time and that didn't work. So this new approach feels very strange. It's kind of counter to most diet and exercise things I've heard. But that point of a new approach is the point resonated.
Tell us a little bit about like your identity, right? Because you mentioned like you so identify with the, you know, a runner, athlete identity. How was it? I mean, because I'm sure you probably went through this grieving process as well, right? Of, you know, you can say, I can hear it in your voice, you sound so confident of the approach now, but what was it like when you first heard that? You know, because you seeked out help. That does not sound right. You seeked out help. And then they were like, boom, you need this whole treatment team. Also, dieting isn't the way and you need to gain weight. I mean, gosh, what was going on in your brain during that?
Yeah. So at the beginning, I think I was probably somewhat protecting myself with these thoughts, and I've really only kind of started approaching them recently, but I sort of had this idea of like, well, if I'm really the athlete I want to be, then I'm going to do all the work. Like, I'm going to do all this recovery stuff. I'm going to eat the way they say I should, because, you know, that's important. But if I train really well, I'll still be smaller. Like, it'll be fine. Like, it's going to take care of itself. It'll be fine. And unfortunately, that worked for about 3 months. And partially because when I was in that larger healthcare system with the providers that weren't as much of a fit, you know, they were really most worried about people who were, frankly, in a lot more dire straits than I was. Like, I had a lot of body image issues, and I certainly was underweight, not eating enough, but I was okay. I wasn't going to have serious, serious health effects in the coming weeks. And there were people who were. And so it was, yeah, they had goals for me and things I should work on, but it wasn't really impressed upon me that a lot should change. And at the same time, I was gearing up for a really big race. And so I actually did get smaller in my first couple of months. And so I kind of had this like, well, that worked. That's fine. Like, I can have it all.
Yeah. Like, I can fight this eating disorder, but I can also still be an athlete and I can still run, and putting that focus on the running. Yeah.
And it did still feed the like, well, being smaller is faster, which I had, you know, pretty well cemented in my head. I still struggle with that. But like, I remember one of my first kind of faster races, when I went to collect my prize, someone, the race director, said, like, oh, this is you? Like, oh, you look too big to be up here to run this fast. And
someone said that to you? No way.
The race director said that. Yeah. And it was one of those things that, like, he almost said it like it was a compliment. And then you sit there and go, you know, that was really, really awful, and you should know better. And especially in any sport, but especially in this sport where eating disorders are rampant.
I think that just brings to light, though, how disorder just sport communities can be, right? Like you said, that is the norm. That is the norm. That is the acceptance that you look a certain way if you're going to win, you know, certain achievements. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. So I've just been working at the I'll just keep chipping away at it. As I keep chipping away at my time, I'll literally like whittle down. And so like in that initial phase of recovery, I still kind of held all those thoughts, because all the people running the times I wanted to run were smaller than me, and I still believe they were smaller than me. Other people kind of look at me and go, I don't really know about that. So that is still an area I'm struggling with. But I was struggling a lot with injuries, but kind of duct taped together just enough to keep training, just enough to run the final race. And so then it was in December that I ran the race, and the first, it's very much a paradox, because I was the fittest I've ever been, and the first half went really well, and I was on pace to meet a really big goal, and then my foot snapped it almost halfway through a marathon. And so I finished, which is probably a really poor choice, which not probably, was a really poor choice. But that was also the just kind of mindset of like, no, I'm going to do this. And it was halfway just because I wanted to, and halfway kind of punishing my body for it. And afterwards, like, I was just so angry. I was really angry that my body failed me. Like, it failed me physically, like in just not staying together. It didn't look the way I wanted to look. And so then in the months after that, I was angry more than anything else. Like, my body failed me. Like, I've done everything I can to take care of myself. Like, I've been, you know, eating what the dietitian said to. I've been training so hard. I've been doing all the stretching. I've done all the foam rolling and mobility. Like, I go to PT. I did all this stuff. Like, why did it break?
I've checked all my boxes.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. I did all the things on the list. Why does it keep breaking? And at that time, I had found the providers that specialize in athletes, and they just kept like, well, because you have this thing called Red S, relative, you know, energy deficiency in sport, and your body can't hold itself together. That's why it keeps doing this. And I didn't quite believe them at first. Like, I was like, no, I eat multiple times. Like, I eat 20. Like, how does this happen? And so it took a long time. And, you know, not just them, but the books they recommended, the podcast they recommended, hearing other athletes' stories to reconcile that. So to reconcile the, you know, like, athletes look like this and eat like this, and also this recovery. So I still don't necessarily feel in myself that I have both. But I understand that it is possible to have both, and that it has to be stronger. Like that again, back to, like, the old way didn't work. Like, I tried that. I tried that for a long time, and it just didn't work. And so I still go through bouts of injuries, and I feel myself, like, start to get angry. But the growth is that I try to recognize it earlier and take time off earlier rather than letting injuries go worse. And I still struggle with the identity piece of, like, am I still an athlete? Like, I might not run as fast as I wanted to. Mm-hmm. Might not look like other people at the start line, but does that matter?
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, that gave me goosebumps, because I think if you're listening, if you've been there, you can relate. And, you know, I hear the frustration too of, you know, you've mentioned that you're doing all the things from a nutrition standpoint, right? And so in your brain, you're like, mm-hmm. I'm healing this. It's an eating disorder, right? But you were transferring a lot of that focus on the running.
Yeah, I was.
There's so much of that mindset. We try to trick ourselves, right?
Totally. And that's something that's coming up in therapy a lot now is, this isn't necessarily about running. This was all here way before. It impacts many other parts of my life. And so it was easy to say, like, oh, like, that diet choice or that day, like, that was about running. And no, not really. It wasn't. It got intertwined, but it wasn't really about the running.
Yeah. Yeah. Like you said, it's not about running. And I think, like you said at the beginning, it's more than food. It's more than weight. I mean, there's so many layers, and it's so complex. So what are, I mean, 18 months is a long time. It's a long time, but a short time. So what are things that you do, like, to just keep you going, to keep you, 2020 has been heavy. So what have you been doing to just stay persistent?
Yeah, I think a lot of it is routine. And that's something I have to be really careful with, because I can get overly structured.
Double-edged sword. Yeah.
Yeah. And so making sure that some of the things in my routine are not physical. And so much of my life had been anchored around running. And then if I'm injured, sort of anchorless, and I feel like I'm kind of flailing throughout the day. So having a routine that doesn't necessarily have to do with that, but has other things that will, you know, keep me healthy and positive, right? So even if it's like, I'm going to do 5 minutes of yoga in the morning, all right, I guess that is physical.
But it's low impact. I think that's...
Yeah, it's low impact, different kinds of goals.
If you're you're like a distance runner, trying to slow down is a hard thing.
Exactly. Oh yeah, way harder. So doing that, having routines with, like, when I call my mom every day, or each week, my partner and I have a screen-free night where we just read and connect with each other. And so, like, that's a routine that's not necessarily every day, but something to look forward to in the week, that no matter what else is happening, I know I'm going to enjoy and, you know, be fulfilled in a different way. Mm-hmm. So I think having those anchors of things to look forward to that won't be moved by a pandemic or if I'm struggling in other ways. I also try to write a lot. That's something that one of the providers had suggested, kind of in the way that reading sort of cuts out those negative voices. Writing is a way to, like, let them speak and then be done. Like, instead of just having them kind of on mute or low throughout the day, like, just get them out there and then put them aside. Like, that's all they get. Like, get them out, yeah. Get them done, get them out of the way. And then that allows me to then later, like if I want to explore the more as my therapist, I can, but I can also just kind of move on. So I have like a workbook of writing exercises that I use to just kind of keep that going.
Yeah, those are great tips. What tips would you have for somebody who wants to focus on their health? They want to address these disordered thoughts or their behaviors around food, but they're nervous to take a non-diet approach, right? They're hearing these things, they're like, okay, this isn't right, but I also am so fearful to just take that next step.
Yeah, that's a really good question. And like, I don't have the perfect answer because I didn't necessarily know I was doing that. I knew I had to show up.
You didn't know you're getting yourself into.
Yeah, I didn't know what I signed up for. I think I would go back to the one point of the diet approach just doesn't work. If it did, you probably wouldn't still be struggling. It's not that, you know, if you try it the 10th time, that's going to be a charm or there's one little piece you're missing. I mean, most people have tried the diet approach and it just doesn't work. It just doesn't help. It just sucks so much out of your life. And I would say one thing that the non-diet approach has really provided is just like some mind space back of like, that's not something you have to worry about all day. Learning to step back and trust your body. The goal is to free you up for other things. I'm sure everyone listening would rather have that mind space for something else. Could, you know, get more enjoyment by spending that energy somewhere else.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, I think just you sharing your story and sharing like you're so positive. And I just imagine, and I guess I've had these questions or these thoughts myself of like, gosh, how differently would planning the season of life be if I was still so focused on my body image? You wouldn't be able to be present. I mean, you listed so many different things that you've been able to do and enjoy in a pandemic, right? And we just think of how much emotional bandwidth that takes up alone, this just dealing with the day-to-day in our world. Yeah. And if we were also dealing with that body image, how exhausting it would be. I mean, it's still exhausting, but...
Totally. It just sucks so much out of you.
Yeah.
And then it's also so negative, you know? Like once you start having those negative thoughts, it's hard for them not to spread to everything else. So... nobody wants that.
Yeah. Yeah. It's not just body. It then affects, you know, like you said, every area of your life. It's so true.
Yeah.
Oh, well, this has been so, so powerful. And, you know, again, I thanked you before and I'm just going to keep thanking you. Like, thank you for your bravery for talking about this because it's not easy. And I can tell you've come so far in your journey and you will continue, you know, to come so far. So I always love to end with this question. What is the best thing that's happened to you this week?
Oh my gosh. I love that question and ending on something positive. So I have a 5-month-old puppy. Y'all all probably heard him many times throughout this.
What kind of puppy is he? He looked, well, I guess 5 months is old in dog years. I don't know. What kind of puppy is he?
He's a cattle dog mix. And so he might have looked kind of big, but he's grown a lot. He's 10 pounds when we got him. He's a whopping 35 now. So he's been so much fun. And so we took him to play in the park the other day, and seeing him just run wild and enjoy it was really positive. One thing that's been really awesome during the pandemic is having the puppy, because he doesn't know it's a pandemic. He doesn't know any plans are on hold. He just gets up every day and is so excited. And so I actually think that's given me a little bit of positivity and energy. So I recommend that for anyone. If there's no puppy in your life, try to spend some time with a puppy.
I love that. We'll surely keep you busy. That's for sure too.
That's for sure. Yeah.
Well, again, thank you so much. This has just been such a blessing. And I know so many women are going to connect with this and hopefully have, you know, some aha moments and be inspired to take action, you know, on their own journey. So thank you so much.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Fit Friends Happy Hour. If you liked this episode, don't forget to share it with a friend. You can subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts or Stitcher. You can also find us on Instagram and Facebook at Fit Friends Happy Hour. Talk to you next time.